This week on the Auto Trader Podcast.
I drove that Bucky and 650,000 Rand fully kitted, got all the kit that you want. And it is super impressive. Like, I need to drive a little bit more, but I did about a 25-30K drive in it. I was super impressed. Like, they are, I don't know how they bring for that money, but it's impressive. Welcome to another episode of the Auto Trader Podcast. Now, we're trying something a little bit different in this episode. We're going to be going on one topic. Joining me for today is Ane, all the way from Cape Town, and Tay. Today, we're going to be discussing the best cars you've never heard of. But I think you probably would have heard of most of these. But let's just say it's cars within the market that we feel need a bit more love than they currently get because they're genuinely good products. I'm going to be going with a slightly newer slant on my list, and Nay's going to bring us some amazing used options, and Tay's here to bring the weirdness with the obscure options.
And then even some approvals as well for some of the cars that you guys have picked. So yeah, I'm basically the audience all converged into one person. So yes.
Absolutely. So Nay, should we start with some of your options, because I saw the list earlier and I concur. I agree with all of these. They're amazing.
Well, I'm going to start with a French car. It was a 2017 Car of the Year finalist, but it was with us for a very brief period of time, and I don't understand why, because it was brilliant. I'm talking about the Renault Kadjar.
Fine choice. Very, very good choice. I remember I went to the international launch in Spain, drove the car, and I thought it was going to be a massive smash hit in South Africa. I thought, Nissan underpinnings, it had that French flair with the styling, but it just never took off in South Africa, and I don't know why.
We went dune driving with a 4x4 model in the Atlantis dunes. I mean, it doesn't even have a low-range transfer case, but it did so well. It performed brilliantly, and it was available in a 1.2 turbo, a 1.6 turbo diesel, which was the flagship, and then a 1.5 turbo diesel joined the ranks a little bit later on. And we all thought it was going to do so well. I mean, that's why whenever I'm looking for a used car on Auto Trader, I always think of the Kadjar, and they are surprisingly affordable.
They are really good. And that 1500 diesel motor from Renault is just an economy king. No matter what car you encounter from the brand that's got it in, whether it be Captur, Duster, or even Kadjar, that 1500 diesel is so light on diesel.
But that's the thing also with the more Eurocentric Renault products. It's like they're such cracking vehicles, but then the thing is they don't get that love and attention. Is it just by virtue of them being French? Because the audience and me is saying that, you know, a lot of people think because it's a French car, said, you know, because of the connotations of what happened in the early 2000s with them, that maybe times have changed and that. But the French cars of now are not the same as the early 2000s. I think that's one thing people have to get across also. Do you reckon?
And I think, well, this car is not that French. I mean, it's a Nissan X-Trail underneath. So Japanese underpinnings, but with the French styling. So it kind of, it's a really good product. And to sort of segue into one of my cars, which is also a Renault, it's the new Captur, which we ran as a long-termer for 3 months. I think that is a cracking car, and I just don't see any of them on the roads.
Yeah, it drives beautifully. It's really sharp. Yeah. The steering is very direct. It's got all the creature comforts you need. That infotainment system is extremely user-friendly. It's a no-brainer to drive. It's economical. What do you want?
And I think a lot of people might not know this, but the drivetrain in that Captur is the same drivetrain you get in a Mercedes-Benz A-Class.
That's true.
So A200, that 1.3-litre four-cylinder turbo petrol motor and the dual-clutch gearbox, same engine and gearbox combination in the Captur as you get in an A-Class Mercedes. So if it's good enough for Mercedes, it should be good enough for a Captur. I always thought, driving that car around, I thought I would see more of them on the roads, but they just haven't sold. I think it could be a pricing thing, but then again, I don't think the pricing is too bad. I'm not sure why. That's kind of what this episode's about. We're fleshing out why these products could potentially be overlooked. But moving on to your next
Oh, I just gotta add something about the Captur real quick.
Yes.
That's the thing also about the Captur is that it oozes its own personality. That's the other thing. And coming back to what I mentioned earlier in that it being a French product as well, those connotations that people tend to have about them, I think that's what also kind of steered people away from the Captur. But it's a phenomenal car. I also had some time in it as well. And I just came off and said, yeah, this has got personality. This is nice. I'd recommend it to someone if they're looking for that sort of vehicle. And I feel a bit sad that the Captur is not selling in that respect. So yeah, the audience has spoken.
Yeah, look, and it's not a case of the Renault brand not being popular, because I'm sure we've seen if you price products right, the Quid sells very well.
Yeah,
the brand is capable of moving volume. It just seems like there is a certain price point where consumers in SA go, okay, that's my cutoff point for what I would spend on a Renault. And that seems to be what has plagued products like the Kadjar previously and the current Captur. Maybe that half a million rand is sort of where people draw the line for the brand. But there's a lot of car to be had in that Captur and in the Kadjar for the money you pay. They're really well-made products. Anyway, moving on to another car that Anay brought up earlier. I think you mentioned a Ford Fusion.
I did. I did mention a Ford Fusion. It was also, it was here for such a short period of time. It came on the scene and everyone was absolutely wowed by it. It had this sort of like Aston Martin styling almost. You had a choice of 1.5 and 2-liter EcoBoost engines. And of course, there was a 2-liter diesel. And that's the one that I would buy.
It's a really good car.
Yeah, it had everything that opens and shuts. It had all these assistance systems, the lane keep assistance. And now that was in 2015. So when all of that stuff was still quite new and it had everything, it was packed with kit. And then it also just disappeared. It was discontinued soon afterwards.
It's really, I put that car up there with the Suzuki Kizashi as sedans that were really good. But South Africans just didn't buy it. It's another weird segment of cars. I remember scaring the PR, weirdly, of Chevrolet around the dynamic handling track in the 2-liter turbo petrol Ford Fusion at the Car of the Year testing. Like, you couldn't believe how fast this big sedan was, because it's basically a Focus ST drivetrain in this massive sedan. Mm. I thought it was a great car. Super practical, very nicely built, and probably a bargain now in the used market. So it's also a really
good suggestion if you can find one. Yeah. But they're very hard to find.
They hardly pop up. Yeah. And when they do come up, they always go. That's the thing.
Yeah. I also think there was a finite number sold, right? So I think there was only so many in the market, and I think the people who have them kind of know what they have and they're holding on to them. So you're not going to get too many coming onto the scene. And it's also a sedan, I suppose. So the market isn't huge for big sort of reasonably priced luxury sedans, I suppose.
I'd buy one. I would absolutely buy a diesel Fusion if I could find one, but I couldn't actually find one.
Do you know what?
They're all gone.
I could find a few petrols, like one or two, but that's it.
You know what you just reminded me of when you mentioned that diesel Fusion is, do you remember the ST line of the Cougar that came in a diesel?
Yes. That was a brilliant, brilliant car.
That's another really good car.
A few of them, yeah.
And we had one on test, black on black, beautiful, beautiful product. Just another thing you can't find on the used market. Not too many sold, and they just don't come up for sale too often. Let's move on to another super underrated pair of products from a Japanese brand. And
Japan.
When I was in Australia recently, this really cemented the fact that South Africans overlook these two products. It's the Mitsubishi Triton and Pajero Sport. Oh. They are everywhere in Australia. That's one of the best-selling buckies in Australia. And you hardly hear of them selling any in South Africa.
Considering the history that Mitsubishi has in South Africa with the Colt, and that you'd expect the Triton to sell a lot more than what it currently does. And those are really cracking cars. And I remember, Sean, you aptly put it, that the Triton was such a good back-to-basics bucky. If you didn't really want something that was like an SUV, you go for the Triton. But then the Pajero Sport, was it Pajero Sport you mentioned? Just wanted to confirm that.
Yes, the same platform as the Triton.
Yeah. Oh, so that as well, it's like, cool, you can have your Bucky Basics and the Triton and then let the Pajero Sport be that bespoke SUV in the Mitsubishi sense. And it makes me a bit sad because I've driven the Pajero Sport, still yet to sample the Triton. And I sat there and I thought, yeah, this can work actually. But then I haven't seen very many Pajero Sports. And let's even bring it to the Outlander as well. Because the Outlander, you saw so many at one point. Like, let's say when we were in primary school or something like that. Yeah. There were so many of them around. But then now it's like, still a great car, but not that many around. But coming back to the Triton and the Pajero Sport. And yeah, the floor. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I found that that Mitsubishi Pajero Sport 4x4 system is almost unparalleled. It is brilliant.
The whole package as well. Like, I think when people look at a Fortuner, right, you've got that annoyance of the third row of seats has to fold up against the side of the vehicle, and it compromises your boot space. If you drive a Pajero Sport, that third row folds into the floor and you've got a flat loading bay. It's so much more practical than a Fortuner. And when you look at Triton, I mean, and Pajero Sport, that Super Select 2 four-wheel drive system, just as capable as a Hilux, just as efficient as a Hilux. I just think maybe when it was launched, it suffered from its styling, really. I don't think people enjoyed the way the Triton and the Pajero Sport looked. And the previous Triton was even worse. That was a really controversial-looking Bucky.
Yeah, controversial, which is code for ugly.
People not like you, the dynamic sheet.
PT Cruiser syndrome, unfortunately.
Okay, it wasn't as bad as the PT Cruiser. Let's argue that. Okay,
very
fine, the PT
cars
Cruiser.
Aren't, eh?
That's the thing. The Chrysler PT Cruiser, that's also another obscure car that people are kind of remembering now these days for the retro styling of that. I mean, we had the Chrysler Prowler as well, but then we didn't get those in South Africa. But the PT Cruiser, yeah, there were a few odd people I knew who had them. But then in the same breath, I was like, this is what we needed exactly.
So to clarify, Auto Trader here, as this team, is not recommending the PT Cruiser as an underrated product here. That's just Tay. And his,
I didn't say it was underrated. It was just a mention.
So, yeah, PT Cruiser is not involved in this discussion. It was just an example of a ugly car, to be honest. That and the SsangYongs, to be honest.
How many PT Cruisers have you seen in Cape Town, Annie?
Quite a few, actually. I think there's a mom driving one at my local high school. So, yeah, they are around. But she tends to park where nobody can see her.
But moving on from one poorly executed retro design to a retro design that is really cool, the VW Scirocco. And you brought that up. Yeah. That is an amazing car.
Oh, one of my absolute favorites, just from a styling perspective. And there was also, of course, the Scirocco R, which was very, very potent.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, if you just like how it looks, you can always just buy the 1.4 turbo. And as a used buy, I would probably suggest the 2-liter turbo with a manual box. But I mean, like I said, if you can get a 1.4 turbo cheaper and it's also manual, I would certainly stick with a self-shifting gearbox in that. But I mean, it's the ultimate, I don't know, it's gorgeous. The interior is beautifully executed. It is a full-fledged little sports car. And I mean, it just gives you that status of, you know, free and footloose and fancy free.
Footloose and fancy free. I like that.
I think the Scirocco was a victim of its own siblings' success, because if the Golf GTI and the Golf R at the time didn't exist, the Scirocco would have sold in huge numbers, I think, in South Africa. I don't think it sold badly, but I don't think it reached the heights that it possibly could have, because everybody wanted the Golf GTI. They wanted the Edition 35 GTI. They wanted the Golf 6R. But then you got the Scirocco, which is a sort of coupe-esque. It's got these beautiful lounge-like leather seats in the non-R derivatives. Beautiful interior.
Yeah.
And it's just a cool-looking car. And it harks back to another cool coupe from VW from the 70s. So it has some heritage, and it just never did as well as I think it should have done in the local market. I agree. A blue Scirocco R, please, for me, manual. That's my spec. But I remember
with the XDS differential as well.
Absolutely.
But I have one question though with the Scirocco compared to its siblings.
Yeah.
Do you think what might have killed the sales a bit, knowing how South Africans think, is that, you know, the Scirocco is nice, it looks cool, but I can't fit a baby seat in the back. It's a two door. I don't want two doors. I want five doors. Could that maybe have stunted its growth, if I can put it like that?
I'm sure that played a part in it. But, you know, most of the people that buy these Golf GTRs and Golf 6Rs were youngsters. Mm-hmm. A lot of them just wanted to put KO4s on the car if they didn't have KO4s already, and then go and do their car events with them. So I don't know if it was the practicality or if it was just the brand cachet around GTI that the Scirocco didn't quite have. But yeah, I just thought that was...
Well, the Golfs were all-wheel drive, and the Scirocco was front-wheel driven only.
Yeah, so you could get the six.
I think people saw four-wheel drive and they thought, oh, I must have this. Front-wheel drive's not that cool, but that was a mistake because, I mean, that was a killer car to drive.
Absolutely. I mean, Scirocco R, up there with Edition 35 Golf in terms of performance, just in a sleeker body. And then obviously, as Anay says, four-wheel drive in the Golf 6R, I think that was a bit of a game changer for everybody because you could now actually put down the power that the car produced. Scirocco, what a throwback. I remember the press car was that like weird
green,
that metallic green,
lime green.
Like they could see you coming from a mile away, but it was kind of cool because you like press cars to be a funky color, I suppose.
Yeah. Lime green, squeeze it on your fish.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever that means, Tay. Another trio of products that I think are massively underrated from the Stellantis group is the Peugeot 208. Peugeot 2008. I don't know if I can say 008. And Opel Corsa. Now, they're all kind of related on the same, they're built on the same architecture, same engines. Mm-hmm. But whenever I drive those cars, I think, what great products. And they don't sell.
They are. Yeah. I'd say, especially the Corsa in particular. I can see that the compact hatchback is kind of starting to fall out of favor somewhat, you know, considering, I guess in a South African sense, the pricing to some degree. But then I look at the Corsa and I sit there and I think, this is such a good hatchback. Why don't I see more of them? In the sense that it's already an established nameplate. The Corsa's been around for yonks. Let's say the 90s pretty much, you know, with the Corsa Light adverts even to all that extent and such. I mean, they even introduced a light version of the current generation Corsa. But I just don't see enough of them. But what do you reckon could be doing it to that point, guys?
Okay, I'm not sure. Sorry, Anay, go for it.
Sorry. Opel parts are quite expensive, especially on older cars. They are known for being a bit more pricey. And I think people don't want to get bogged down with, am I going to find parts? Are they going to be expensive?
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to pretty much echo what Anay just said there. I think Opel, having been a part of General Motors for many years in South Africa, and then General Motors having left, and then Opel being bought by what is now called the Stellantis Group, which now owns a portfolio of products which have also got a bit of notoriety for not having parts availability with the likes of Citroën and Peugeot, I think Opel is now lumped with that group, and South Africans are hesitant because they think maybe the after-sales service won't be good. I'm not saying that the after-sales service is good or bad. I think that they have gotten their act together in many ways, and there are parts, and there's definitely a large number of dealerships. But I think the stigma and the perception from the public is still, you know, these brands maybe don't offer the after-sale service that we want, and maybe the brands don't have the cachet that they used to. But the products are really, really good, like a 2008 and even a Mokka, which is basically like a Corsa on stilts. That's a really good car, and you just never see them. They're really good products.
I fell in love with that Mokka when we had it in test. I just thought, this is just something which has personality. It's brutish. It's different. And even it came in a lime green color as well. Squeeze that on your fish, if you will. And I sat there and I thought, you know what? This will do fairly well, especially with people that like a car as a fashion accessory, as a sense. And even when I looked at the pricing of it, I was like, this actually isn't that terrible considering what's on offer. But yeah, I just don't see them. And I thought, this is a bit of a shame, but here we are.
I mean, 2008 or 2008, however you say it, was one of Europe's best-selling cars.
Really?
Last year. Yeah. It was right up there. So the car is good. I mean, if Europe accepts the car as being, you know, good enough to be bought in the tens of thousands, then the car is definitely good. So it has definitely has to do with the brand perception within the country, because that is a very good product. That and the 208. I remember driving a 208 and a Polo not too far apart from each other. And I thought, you know, like you could hop into either of those cars and be happy. And yet the Polo outsells that 208 by, you know, a lot. They sell only about 800 Polos. I say only 800 Polos. I think they would be lucky to sell sort of 20 208s a month. So it's a real problem for the Peugeot brand. And it's not the product. Like I say, it's probably the stigma surrounding it.
It's such a nice car.
Next car from a Ney is a car that we both share a love for. It was one of my first proper press cars back in like 2012, 2013, I think. It's the Audi A7 3-liter TDI Sportback.
Oh, it is just sublime. It is perfect to me in every sense. Like standard spec to size to handling, fuel economy. It's a diesel, so it's really, really, yeah, I mean, you can drive about 1,100 Ks on one tank, and then you've got this blistering performance, 180 kilowatts and 500 newton meters of torque. 0 to 100 in, I think, something like 6.3 seconds. And you're still getting over 1,000 Ks from one tank. What more do you need?
It's true. I remember driving that car early in my career and thinking, well, cars aren't going to get much better than this. I suppose I can, you know, hang up the old pen and not, won't have to write about cars anymore. But, you know, cars do get better than that, but not much better than that A7. That thing, like Anay says, just ticks every box. It's just such a good product. I mean, if you could get one for a good price that hasn't been abused and has been maintained properly, that is a good-looking car, got an amazing powertrain, very similar drivetrain to what you get in V6 Amarok, in when they still did diesels in the Porsche Panamera, similar drivetrain. You get that in an Audi body style. That A7 was a very, and still is a very good looking car.
It has aged so gracefully. I mean, just look at those rear lights.
And Audi, Audi interiors of that era are aging very well. I don't know what it is. Some products, some brands, they just, the interiors don't age very well. But the Audi exteriors and interiors from that era are aging very, very well. I agree with you.
I mean, even in Europe as well, I've seen a lot of, let's say, company cars, even to some extent, and then even just people buying Audi A7s, even like, you know, just coincidentally, I was watching some television dramas on Netflix and that, and then I just see, why are there so many Audi A7s? I thought to myself, but then now that you mention it, that, yeah, it makes sense. It looks good.
Audi could
it
be
drives
paying,
well, and
Audi
here you go.
Audi could be paying for it, though, like in Iron Man.
It's
like, I don't think Tony Stark drove an R8 by choice. I think Audi paid the studio, but it's still cool. It's still the Iron Man car because of that.
Still good.
Well, from a pricing perspective, I'm looking at 2011 model on Auto Trader, and it's going for $189,000 with 170,000 kilos on it.
Wow. So do you get a Suzuki Espresso or do you get an A7? That's
what can you afford to maintain?
The A7 with a good motor plan.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, I think that's a good move. Moving on to the last car for the day, something I experienced recently and a brand that has eluded us as motoring journalists for, well, a few years. I realized that they've been here since 2017 when they invited us to their launch recently, JAC.
Oh, yeah.
And I drove that new T9. They've got a T-series of Buckies. You get T6, which is super basic entry-level double cab, T8, which is moving up, and then T9. I drove that Bucky and 650,000 Rand, fully kitted, got all the kit that you want. And it is super impressive. Like, I need to drive a little bit more, but I did about a 25-30K drive in it. I was super impressed. Like, they are, I don't know how they bring it in for that money, but it's impressive.
What are we running?
From a looks perspective, it looks like something that's just straight off the set of Mad Max. Mm-hmm. I mean, just look at that grill. It's very imposing.
very, very, like I was blown away by it, but I suppose we'll chat more about it when everybody has an opportunity to drive it. They have started a media campaign, so you'll see a review of the car fairly soon from the Auto Trader team. And that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you guys so much for watching. If you haven't done so already, please remember to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Hit this like button if you like the content. Leave us a comment below letting us know what topics you'd like us to tackle on the podcast next. Till next time, cheers.
See ya.
Search Auto Trader.